You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com. ISIS howls, "We are in your home," as they lose their own home. Intel says a new patch for Spectre and Meltdown is coming to fix instability problems. Look closely at URLs. IDN spoofing is out and about. Satori expands the reach of its botnets. New ransomware strains surface. Sprite Coin is no coin at all. And Sonic the Hedgehog fans, watch out. Three popular games may expose you to hacking. I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, January 23, 2018. ISIS is seeking to inspire lone wolf terrorists and frighten infidels with the slogan, "We are in your home." The slogan appears with an online picture of a jihadist wearing an ISIS-branded smog, only his pixelated eyes visible, posing in front of a snowy shot of New York's Central Park. This sort of campaign can be expected to continue as the caliphate dwindles into its online diaspora. Intel tells users to disregard its recent Spectre patch. A new, less troublesome version is due out soon. The chip giant says it's figured out why machines based on its Broadwell and Haswell platforms reboot and become unstable after they've applied the patch Intel issued earlier this month for Meltdown and Spectre. So, don't apply them. They'll have a new, better version out soon. Linux creator Linus Torvalds has been serving as a goad to better patching at Intel, whose approach to fixing the vulnerabilities he calls complete garbage. He's told his Linux kernel mailing list, quote, "They do literally insane things. They do things that do not make sense," end quote. Intel feels a bit picked on, asking if everyone could be less shouty, but admits that Linus may have a point or two. The recent revelations of the Meltdown and Spectre vulnerabilities have led to a great deal of uncertainty as users continue to sort through their real-world practical implications. Chris Weber is a security strategist at SafeBreach, and he takes us through their efforts to make sense of the situation.
The vast majority of computers, that's servers, that's end-user computers, are going to be affected by this vulnerability where either an application or a specific wrong user can get protected data from places it shouldn't be able to get. So it is a little concerning in that way that it's so widespread, certainly. And we also know that some of the patches that were pushed to try to fix this were pulled back as they were maybe rushed out a little hastily and caused more harm than good in a lot of ways. And I think where we're at right now is that we're sort of at the tipping point to see whether we're going to be able to get out ahead of this or whether it's going to linger for quite some time.
Now, one thing you all are doing there at SafeBreach is you're running simulations for these attacks. Can you take us through what that means and what the benefit is there?
Sure thing. So that's part of what SafeBreach does, you're exactly right, is we simulate attacks or exploits. We simulate ways to take advantage of vulnerabilities just like an attacker would. So in this case, though we haven't seen any real attacks out in the wild, we can create our own attacks that take advantage of this vulnerability. Written simulations that try to get simulated application data, simulated protected data from the kernel space out of that machine to our simulators. Now, we're not trying to get any real data, not any real customer information. We make up the data, we put it in there, and we see if we can get it out. And in that way, you don't have to just patch and hope. You can actually patch and validate that the patches worked as you expected.
And are there any specific insights that you all have gained from running these simulations?
On the right kind of machines, you know, Intel-based servers for sure, running the right operating systems. The patch from Microsoft, for example, actually did help mitigate this, which early on there was some concern about. Since this is an architectural vulnerability, the industry wasn't sure if a software-only patch was really going to be helpful. We thought it was always going to have to be a combination of an operating system patch, and certainly a firmware or microcode patch. But even the Microsoft patches seem to stop at least some of the vulnerabilities from being exploited very well. Now, we've also seen in ensuing days that on the wrong kind of machines, those can be locked up, prevented from booting with a patch that isn't well executed. So hopefully we see the trends towards the working side just expand over the next few days.
And how do you see this playing out? I mean, I think rightfully so, Meltdown and Spectre have taken, you know, a great deal of attention. This is certainly something, the scale of which we have not seen before, or at the very least rarely see. But mm-hmm. I mean, long term, is this going to be something that requires our continuing attention, or could this even prove to be perhaps a distraction?
I think that's a great question. It is extremely widespread. It's a really big impact, and it's at a very low level. So it's something that we all should focus on, we should understand, we should try to mitigate as best we can. But like any vulnerability or any patch, there's going to come a point where we reach diminishing returns. Some operating systems may never be patched. Certainly, there's lots of hardware out there that's no longer supported, or even some of the supported hardware might be a little arcane and might not be getting those firmware patches soon. And we could spin around and around on this as an industry for a long time being worried. But we have to remember defense in depth. If we have systems that we can't patch that might have this vulnerability, an attacker needs multiple phases in order to get to those systems. We need to make sure that we've got defenses in the network to stop them from getting there. We need to make sure that we segregate our network so that lateral movement's harder. And certainly, if data is compromised, we need to try to make sure it never leaves our environments, never leaves those machines. So even if we can't fix the Spectre or the Meltdown problem, we might be able to fix the overall exploitation problem by looking elsewhere in our environments.
That's Chris Weber from Safe Breach. Security company Repnight says it found a collection of compromised credentials from top 500 law firms in the UK. They say that around 1 million email credentials are in the cache, a number which seems very high indeed. Some of the data came from the firms themselves, but much of the stolen information originated in third-party breaches. In this case, the risk is not so much direct identity theft, although of course that's a possibility too, but rather the use of the credentials for dangerously plausible social engineering campaigns. Farsight Security has issued a study of how internationalized domain names, IDNs, can use non-Latin characters from, say, the Greek or Cyrillic alphabets to craft sites that impersonate URLs that use the more familiar Roman characters. Spoofed sites are used for more persuasive phishing. Thus, a Cyrillic soft sign, for example, can be used to spell Facebook, which might fool the casual eyes of users normally alert to the URLs they follow. Other examples are easy to come up with. Companies whose sites have been impersonated in this way include Apple, Adobe, Amazon, Bank of America, Cisco, Coinbase, eBay, Bittrex, Google, Microsoft, Netflix, New York Times, Twitter, Walmart, Yahoo, Wikipedia, YouTube, and Yandex. IoT devices containing ARC chipsets are turning up in Satori botnets, which indicates that botnet controllers have significantly increased the number of Maverick devices they can rope into their herd. 32-bit ARC processors are power-efficient chips found in automobiles, including electronic steering controls and entertainment systems. Consumer goods like smart thermostats, personal fitness devices, and TV set-tops, and also in industrial control systems. Arbor Networks, the firm warning of Satori's expansion, estimates that more than 1.5 billion systems with ARC chips ship every year. An open-source ransomware project forms the basis of a new family of ransomware, DesuCrypt, and its DeuceCrypt variant, now being widely distributed in criminal markets. Researcher Michael Gillespie has developed a decryptor for infected files, so bravo, Gillespie. And let's hope that this sector of the criminal-to-criminal market remains largely frustrated. Security company Acronis warns that Paradise ransomware, which saw a flurry of activity this past September, has resurfaced. It spreads in a commonplace but nonetheless dangerous way, as a malicious zip file distributed by spam email. There are a number of different cryptocurrencies in circulation, but at least one of them isn't what it appears to be. In fact, it's not a cryptocurrency at all. Researchers at security company Fortinet report that Spritecoin is a bogus cryptocurrency that's nothing more than fish bait. It leads the unwary to ransomware.
It also adds not just insult to injury, but further injury to injury by not only encrypting victims' files, but installing other malware that lingers after decryption. Once the marks cough up the ransom, payable only in the genuine cryptocurrency Monero, Spritecoin's decryptor uploads a fresh malicious executable and leaves malware behind on their machines that parses images, harvests certificates, and activates web cameras. So remember, there is no such thing as Spritecoin. It's a scam whenever and wherever it appears. The Muscat securities market in Oman, a stock exchange with a $23 billion market cap, has closed a Telnet vulnerability. Telnet is always bad news nowadays. And also changed the credentials on one of its routers. Those credentials were, of course, wait for it, username admin and password admin. Finally, researchers at Predeo Security Systems have found that three Sonic the Hedgehog games for Android, all available in the Google Play Store, are leaky. They could expose users' geolocation, and they could also expose them to man-in-the-middle attacks. The games are Sonic the Hedgehog Classic, Sonic Dash 2, Sonic Boom, and Sonic Dash. The information leaked includes mobile network information, service provider names, network types, OS version numbers, and device model and manufacturer. The problem seems to lie in the use of a third-party library, Android in Mobi D, which allows campaign monitoring, crash reporting, and software analysis. The library does so through 11 servers, three of which are insecure. Maybe you're not worried because you're more of the Crash Bandicoot type, but with more than 100 million downloads of these Sonic apps, come on, let's get secure and make America fast again. After all, we hear the federal government is open for business again, for now, anyway. Is that Anthem petition for City Escape still open?
Every day, your IAM tech debt grows. Your multi-generational services struggle to work together. Building an identity fabric can fix this. It makes all your identity tooling stronger and allows you to connect any app to any service you want to use with zero coding, zero maintenance, and zero app downtime. Strata's identity orchestration platform separates the identity logic from your applications so you can optimize existing IAM tools and manage them in a single control plane. Now, every vendor, standard, and architecture work together. In short, building your identity fabric means you can secure your non-standard apps, keep your complex access policies, retire outdated IDPs, and modernize in record time. So build your fabric with Strata Identity and get rid of tech debt for good. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity priorities, and receive a pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute. Joe, welcome back.
Hi, Dave.
So we got some feedback from a listener.
Okay.
This is from Nathaniel Yu. He's had a couple of ideas about security postures, and I think they're worth discussing here. One of them is, instead of teaching people not to click suspicious links, teach them never to click links in emails, or even better, disallow links altogether. This can be done without disrupting internal communication simply by placing links in a safe site or shared folder which the end user must authenticate into and then notifying them that the link exists via email. What do you think?
There are systems that you can get for your email now that will strip links out of the email message because it's just a simple regular expression. So it's pretty easy to identify a link, particularly if it's in HTML, anyway, because they all look kind of similar.
Right.
They all have a regular syntax that must be matched in order for the URL to work in the first place.
Sure.
So matching them is easy, and then taking them out is a simple find and replace. I know that at the university, we have a system that if the link is identified as suspicious, it will replace that link in your email with a Hopkins web page that says, that lets the user know, we think this link is malicious. You shouldn't click on these links.
So sort of quarantines it.
Yeah, it kind of quarantines it. And
makes
takes
you
it
think
out.
Twice.
I do like the idea of completely removing all the links and making and telling people don't click on any of these links. I think that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
And if you get an email from whoever you think it's coming from, let's say it's you're doing business with Capital One or Wells Fargo, and you get an email from them that has a link in it. Never click on that link. Just go to your web browser and enter the name of the website that you're going to, and or use your own links. Access the web page that way.
Yeah, because even if you mouse over it and it looks familiar enough, they've gotten clever enough that they yep. can make it look familiar
that's,
enough.
That's right. They started buying up domains that look similar. They've replaced L's with ones, and there's a very small chance that you'll notice that the pixel on the L is not aligned with the top of the L. Instead, it's dipped down one pixel
right.
on a serif, and it's something as simple as that replacing a one with an L, or an L with a one rather,
yeah.
can totally take you to it. Will take you to a completely different website.
Right, of course. Yeah. So better safe than sorry.
Yep.
All right, Joe Kerrigan. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Are lengthy security reviews pulling attention away from your security program? With the largest network of trust centers, Vanta can help you streamline security reviews to win customer trust, save time, and close deals fast. Proactively demonstrate security by showcasing key resources like your SOC 2 or ISO 27001, and provide real-time evidence for passing controls. And when a security questionnaire is required, Vanta takes the first pass for you. Visit vanta.com/cyber to take a self-serve tour. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpe, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Hey, listeners. We're always looking for ways to improve the N2K CyberWire network and maintain the intelligence-driven news experience that keeps you in the know on the latest developments in cybersecurity. We've launched our 2024 audience survey and would love for you to take a few minutes to share your feedback. And hey, there's even a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card if you complete the survey. Visit cyberwire.com/survey. That's cyberwire.com/survey. And share your feedback now. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.